Thank you for standing by. I would like to inform all participants that your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. Today's call is being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Benjamin Haynes. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Amanda, and thank you all for joining us today. We are joined by Dr. Jay Butler, CDC's Deputy Director for Infectious Diseases, who will provide a brief update on CDC's investigation into children with acute hepatitis and adenovirus infection before taking your questions. During the question-and-answer period, we will be joined by Dr. Umesh Parikshar from CDC's Division of Viral Diseases. I would now like to turn the call over to Dr. Butler.
Hey, thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. Good morning to those of you out west. Thank you for joining us today for another update on the investigation of pediatric hepatitis of unknown cause, and I look forward to our chance to also have a period of discussion after a short brief. So let me start with an update on the number of pediatric patients under investigation. This week, we received reports of 180 children altogether in 36 states and territories, these cases occurring over the past 7 months. This is an increase in 71 patients from the 109 reported during our last telebrief on May 5th, 2 weeks ago today. The vast majority of what may appear to be new cases are actually retrospectively identified, going as far back as October. Because our investigation includes looking at medical records that far back, what we are seeing is some cases that were diagnosed and treated many months ago. As a result, many additional cases are not actually newly occurring cases of hepatitis, and over 90% of the cases that we've identified so far or patients under investigation reported onset prior to May of 2022. I know we're all eager for information, especially regarding what's causing these illnesses in young children. We continue to work with clinicians and our state and local public health partners to gather more detailed data, but I want to caution that it does take time to assess the evidence. Unfortunately, we know that up to an estimated 30 to 50% of all cases of hepatitis that occur in children are of unknown cause. So as we get cases reported, we do recognize that there is a background rate of pediatric hepatitis of unknown cause as well. As we work to answer the questions of what's causing this phenomenon and share what we're learning today, I want to outline some of the activities that have been undertaken to learn more. CDC's investigation is taking pursuing four lines of investigation. Number one, first, we are working to better understand whether this is a true increase in the number of cases of hepatitis in children or an existing pattern that's now been revealed due to improvements in detecting cases. Thus far, we have not been able to document an actual increase in the overall number of pediatric hepatitis cases. To determine this, we're examining national data sources to look at trends in hepatitis in children going back a number of years. This gives us a better understanding of the background rates of disease. Another way of tracking these is to look at the National Syndromic Surveillance Program, which allows us to receive and analyze data as early as 24 hours after a patient's visit to a participating facility. For example, we're looking at specific emergency department visits for pediatric hepatitis, as well as liver transplants in children nationwide. Currently, these numbers are stable. We continue to gather and evaluate background information on the expected rates of children with hepatitis of unknown cause. While the data that we have so far are reassuring, we still continue to examine further for any trends. Second, we're collaborating closely with clinicians and public health departments nationwide to identify and investigate children who may have potential hepatitis of unknown origin and to gather more information. While rare, children do sometimes get serious hepatitis, and it's not uncommon, as mentioned earlier, for the cause to be unknown. That's why we're working with state and local health departments to examine the medical records of children who've had hepatitis in the past. We're also in close communication with our international counterparts to understand what they are learning from cases globally. In addition, we'll continue to update our clinical guidance and raise awareness among medical partners. Yesterday, we held a community outreach and clinician activity. I call them COCA calls because that's easier to say. And this provided key updates and also provided an opportunity for question and answer with clinicians. Third, we are actively investigating to identify potential causes and factors and to rule out others. As we better understand the situation, we'll be able to further refine our guidance and recommend potential interventions. This is the type of shoe leather epidemiology that our disease detectives are trained to do. Much like detective work, CDC investigators and our colleagues at state and local health departments are methodically, but as quickly as possible, gathering evidence to find clues. This includes examining medical records of children who had hepatitis in the past, as well as interviews with extensive exposure histories, such as drugs, foods, toxins, with their parents. From the medical reports that we've analyzed so far, we have not found any common exposures or patterns. While this does not absolutely rule out anything this early in the investigation, it does help us narrow our search as it gets us closer to what we can eliminate and focus on further. At present, the leading hypothesis remains an important role for adenovirus 41. However, we continue to keep looking for multiple causes beyond just adenovirus. This includes whether a past infection with SARS coronavirus 2 could be contributing or whether any of the patients under investigation met the criteria for the multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children, or MIS-C, that has been associated with SARS coronavirus 2 infection. In addition, we're preparing to conduct a case control evaluation to compare whether the detection rate of adenovirus in children with liver disease differs from that in children without liver disease. These findings could help determine whether adenovirus is just an incidental infection that has been detected or whether there might be a causal link. We'll also explore other potential exposures and infections and risk factors to determine if they occur more frequently in children with liver disease compared to children without liver disease. While adenovirus will be the main focus, lines of investigation will also be used to examine the role of other infections. We're also awaiting initial data from a case control study conducted in the United Kingdom, where 197 patients under investigation have been reported. These data could help us focus our investigation further. Fourth, we're conducting lab testing to look more closely at the viral genome and other potential pathogens. This includes viral sequencing of the adenovirus specimens from as many patients as possible. Preliminary lab findings indicate there may be multiple viral strains of adenovirus 41 involved, which indicates that a single mutated strain of adenovirus is less likely than when we talked 2 weeks ago. However, we still need to complete whole genome sequencing, which will require mapping out all of the information from the virus. In the past 2 weeks, and in collaboration with our state colleagues, we've made progress in identifying and obtaining additional specimens related to this investigation to be tested. This includes testing fixed liver pathology specimens for adenovirus and SARS coronavirus 2, as well as looking for other potential infections that might involve the liver. This is an evolving situation and an ongoing investigation, but it's important to note that severe hepatitis in children does remain rare. While this investigation is ongoing, we encourage parents and caregivers to be aware of the symptoms of hepatitis, including vomiting, dark urine, light-colored stools, and yellowing of the skin, also known as jaundice, and to contact their child's health care provider if any of these symptoms develop. As we learn more, we'll share additional information and provide updates. And with that, I will turn it back over to the moderator.
Thank you, Dr. Butler. Amanda, we are ready to take questions.
So if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name slowly and clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. Again, that's star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. Our first question comes from Edwards with NBC News. Your line is open.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm curious, how many of these 180 cases have been newly diagnosed since your last briefing, and how many are simply retrospective? Are patients still presenting even today with this unexplained hepatitis? Also, are you still investigating just 5 possible deaths that could be related? Thank you.
Thank you for that question, Erica. So we have not identified any additional fatal cases. And over the past 2 weeks, the cases altogether, 7% have been over the past 2 weeks. So the vast majority going back are much earlier in the course of the investigation. If we look at graphing out the cases by the date of onset, it's relatively flat. There's maybe a little bit more cases that have occurred over the past couple of months, but we think that that may primarily be ascertainment bias. In other words, the more recent cases are the more likely ones to be able to be reported and identified, whereas a case that might have occurred last November or December might be less likely to be reported. I do have one update. There was one additional fatal case that was reported yesterday. So I will say we're aware of 6 cases that have had a fatal outcome.
And just a quick follow-up. So would this be considered, sort of a small spike? Are they now decreasing? Was there something specific to the past 7 months that could have been contributing to these cases?
Yeah, and that gets back to our earlier discussion about the overall rates of pediatric hepatitis as well. So there's really nothing about this so far that has suggested the word spike is appropriate as a descriptor. The question of whether or not this is something that has been ongoing for even longer and we're just recognizing it now, I think, is a very reasonable one. So I think ultimately, really all we can say for sure at this point in time is we're not seeing a dramatic increase in the number of cases.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. You are allowed to ask one question and one follow-up question. Our next question comes from Brenda Goodman with CNN. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Butler. Can you tell me, are there any sex differences in the 180 cases that you've identified and any other epidemiological links between the cases that you've been able to see?
Yeah, based on the cases that the patients under investigation, the reports that we've received, as well as the ones that are described by the United Kingdom, there's no clear differences by sex.
Next question.
Any other epidemiological links between the cases that you can tell?
Not epidemiologic links. If you're asking about demographics, such as your first question, we do see still the median age is around age 2 years, so the the skewing tends to be towards younger preschool age children rather than school age children.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Andrew Joseph with STAT. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. Can you just, I realize like some of this is retrospective, but can you provide whatever details are available for the percentage of cases that have tested positive for either adenovirus 41 or SARS-CoV-2? And then you updated on the deaths, but I just wonder if there was any update on the number who've had to have a transplant. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that question. In terms of the patients that have evidence of SARS-CoV-2 infection, it is less than 20%, very comparable to what's being reported from the United Kingdom. I think when we spoke 2 weeks ago, we mainly had data on the first 9 cases in Alabama, most of which occurred prior to the Omicron wave. So it's hard to say how much of that shift is because there's been a lot more COVID that has been transmitted in the community since October as opposed to more recently. Your second question was how many have received transplant? There are 15 that have been reported to date of that 180.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Krista Marr with Politico. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for doing this call. I just had a quick question. So you said that the number of total cases are flat in terms of like this isn't a spike in the number of cases, but then you also said that 30 to 50% of cases in a normal year or so would be hepatitis with an unknown cause. So I guess what my question is it even if the number is flat, the number of cases is flat, is the number of unknown cause cases higher than you would normally be seeing?
Yeah, that's a really good question because hepatitis in and of itself is not a reportable condition. So when we talk about the proportion that are of unknown etiology, that's really derived from special studies, from the medical literature, rather than any kind of ongoing public health surveillance. So one of the questions that I think that raises is whether or not adenovirus 41 might be a newly identified cause of hepatitis of unknown etiology that just has not been recognized outside of the immunocompromised population in the past.
Okay, thank you. And I just quickly, because you mentioned adenovirus, like I remember on the last call, you guys talked about the surveillance for that being really poor or just, you know, there isn't great surveillance for it, perhaps for the same reason. So how are you going about investigating that now if, you don't have a good window into what that infection rate might look like in kids?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So, part of the ongoing investigation has involved working with some of the diagnostic labs, commercial labs, that while they may not do the subtyping, they frequently do PCR for adenovirus to be able to look more closely at what some of the trends have been in adenovirus nationally. And that analysis is ongoing.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dennis Thompson with Health Day. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for taking our questions. There was a recent study that came out from Case Reserve Western where they were looking at COVID cases in childhood hepatitis, and they were saying that COVID had been linked to increased signs of liver damage. Are y'all aware of that, and are y'all figuring that into your investigation of this?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So is the data on and some of the reports on liver function tests and hepatitis in SARS coronavirus infection are coming out. A couple of things that we were aware of before any of the discussion of pediatric hepatitis of unknown etiology had come along. One is that kids sometimes do have elevation in their liver function tests during COVID. Additionally, most of those cases would go undetected unless it's a severe enough infection to result in hospitalization. So one of the tricky things to sort out is how much of the elevation in liver function tests is really related, is specific to SARS coronavirus 2 infection as opposed to severe illness. It's not uncommon that there would be some elevation in liver function tests and even elevations in bilirubin among children who are severely ill in the intensive care unit.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Frances Sellers with the Washington Post. Your line is open.
Thanks so much for taking my question. I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about your fourth point when you talked about lab testing, looking more deeply at the looking more closely at the viral genome. You said that I think that there were there could be multiple strains of adenovirus 41 involved. And then you said that made it less likely, and I just missed the rest of that sentence, less likely.
Yes, thank you, and happy to clarify. And if you'll forgive me, since we've all been focused on one virus for the past 2.5
right.
years, maybe I'll use a little of that nomenclature. It makes it less likely that this is a single variant of adenovirus 41. The adenovirus as a DNA virus tends to be more stable anyway, but DNA viruses sometimes mutate also. But in this instance, because there is some differences in the sequences that we have seen during these partial sequence analyses, it suggests that there are multiple strains of adenovirus 41 circulating in the community. So that does also then pique our interest in the role of cofactors as well as adenovirus 41 more generally. In other words, adenovirus 41 seems to be playing a role in these kids. We will evaluate further in the case control studies, but it also raises questions about other cofactors that maybe making the infections that occur more likely to result in hepatitis.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Liz Zabo with Kaiser Health News. Your line is open.
Hi. I apologize if you've answered this question because my connection is scratchy, but what is the exact background rate for pediatric hepatitis? How many cases do you normally see per year, and also how many of these kids tested positive for SARS antibodies?
Thank you for that question. I'm going to actually pass that over to Dr. Parashar.
Thank you, Dr. Butler. Yes, it's something we are still continuing to gather information for. As we mentioned before, there is no good surveillance system for pediatric hepatitis other than the known viral causes, the A to E viruses. So we've tried to query databases of hospital discharge records and other means to get some estimates. And again, these are preliminary numbers, but roughly, I think if you exclude the hospitalizations in children under 10 for the known viral causes, you're looking at somewhere in the range of 1,500 to 2,000 hospitalizations per year in children under 10. So that's a fairly large number. I think it also illustrates the point that Dr. Butler was making before, that if adenovirus is associated with a proportion of those, say 10%, it may be hard to see an increase even if it doubles from 100 to 200. It would be hard to pick up in an overall increase from 2,000 to 2,100 in that instance.
Thanks. And did you say how, I'm sorry, my connection seems really scratchy, but what percentage of the kids tested so far have SARS-CoV-2 antibodies?
Excuse me, this is the operator. Benjamin, are you still there?
Yes, sorry, that's my mistake. We had the line muted.
Okay.
No worries.
Yes, we have two mute buttons in Benjamin's defense. One was on, one was off.
Okay, so let me start again. In terms of the question on SARS-CoV-2 antibody for these children, when they came in for treatment of hepatitis, many were screened for active SARS-CoV-2 infection, which is by testing a respiratory swab for presence of virus. The actual antibody testing, which would indicate any evidence of previous infection, is not something that's routinely done clinically. So we are in the process of obtaining the relevant specimens, serum, and plasma from children who had come in for treatment and then would do the SARS-CoV-2 antibody testing, but it's not happened yet.
Next
question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dina Beasley with Reuters. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. You mentioned that adenovirus is still your leading hypothesis as a cause. And by that, do you mean, is that associated with the pandemic and people being closeted for 2 years, and that this is, they're more susceptible to, or the children are more susceptible to that virus? And then secondly, I just wanted to verify the background rate of hospitalizations for child liver disease. You said it's roughly 1,500 to 2,000 per year. Was that correct? Thanks.
Yeah, so let's start with the second question just to confirm. Yes, 1,500 to 2,000 pediatric admissions for hepatitis each year. Regarding the role of adenovirus, we're consistently seeing that there's evidence, it's very common to find evidence of adenovirus infection in these kids. So I think we can, part of the update is to say the evidence is accumulating that there's a role for adenovirus, particularly adenovirus 41. The exact role that it plays, I think, is where we're really wanting to focus the investigation now. The fact that we're observing this at the end, or I hope the end, but late in the pandemic that we've all been experiencing over the last 2.5 years, does raise questions about what role it could play. And one that we've been discussing already today is whether or not there's a role of prior infection with SARS coronavirus 2. Another is the impact of the pandemic mitigation measures. Is this something that actually we see pretty much every winter, but because most kids haven't been exposed as frequently in the past, is there a catch-up in the amount of exposure that's occurring now that's allowed this to be a recognizable phenomenon?
Thank you. Our next question comes from John Woolfolk with San Jose Mercury News. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. Can you clarify what the assessment is now regarding what role, if any, COVID might be playing in this? And second, can you, we've gotten questions from people about whether it's possible that vaccines play some role in this. I realize the median age in the kids is below the vaccination age, but if you could address that question.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So vaccine seems really unlikely to be playing a direct role, given that the vast majority of these children are unvaccinated and most are too young to have received vaccine anyway. I think the role of SARS coronavirus 2, if any, could be, there's a lot of lines of investigation there, whether or not there is some immune phenomenon that is related to prior infection, having had COVID in the past. That's where the antibody studies hopefully could be helpful, but particularly we would need some control groups, because we know that most kids under age 5 have had SARS coronavirus 2 infection now. Another possibility is it's been proposed that some portion of people who develop COVID have chronic infection or prolonged infection in the gastrointestinal tract, and does that in any way prime the immune response to a very vigorous and broad nonspecific immune reaction that might potentially damage the liver. So these are all hypotheses that we need to very systematically approach and test and to evaluate to really sort out the answer to the question that you're asking. So maybe to summarize, I think vaccines are very low on the suspect list and very unlikely in terms of having a direct effect. But the role that SARS coronavirus 2 might play is certainly one that we want to continue to pursue.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jacqueline Jeffrey Walensky with WNYC. Your line is open.
Hi there. Thank you for doing this. I was wondering if you could comment a bit in general about the geographic distribution of the cases, if any, and are you seeing any patterns as to where cases are clustering? Thanks.
Yeah, so the 36 states and territories tend to be the ones that have the most people. So it appears that cases that have cases are the ones that have the most people that could potentially develop cases. It's geographically very dispersed. So we are not seeing any kind of clustering within geographic areas.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Aaron Billups with Spectrum News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my question. Just wondering about the fatalities. Why might some children progress that much? Is it just, does it happen when treatment of symptoms is delayed? What can we tell parents and families out there?
Amesh, do you want to, you may be more familiar with the cases than I am specifically.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I mean, the illness in many of these patients is severe, and we can see that when you examine from the ones where we have biopsy or other specimens, the pathology and the extent of the injury in the liver can be quite extensive. And so it is clearly a severe disease that we are taking and investigating very carefully for that reason. And a proportion of these, despite treatment, do unfortunately die. We are working very hard to understand for that reason both the mechanism of illness and potentially what treatment modalities might help to avoid the most severe outcomes from this illness.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Amy Westerby with CBS News. Your line is open.
Hi there. I was just looking for a little clarity between two comments that you made, talking about the pediatric liver admissions each year, like what the normal numbers are, 1,500 to 2,000. But then another comment that you made about it, it's not something that's that's reportable, there's poor surveillance of it. Was it the Alabama cases that initially brought it to your attention? Or I guess I'm confused about what brought this to your attention in the first place and why this is an issue if you're saying this may be something that's always been there.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to clarify. The first part of your question about the number of liver admissions, that's based on analysis of hospital discharge data. So you're correct that hepatitis of unknown etiology is not a reportable condition, but we can analyze hospital discharge data retrospectively to determine the number of admissions related to hepatitis in total. Regarding the cluster, initial cluster of nine in Alabama, that is what first brought this phenomenon to our attention. And then, of course, once our colleagues in the United Kingdom had alerted us to what they were seeing this past month, we began to connect the dots and realized that there might be that what had been observed in Alabama might be the same phenomenon as what they were just starting to see then in the United Kingdom.
And you believe that it is a phenomenon? This is different. This is unusual, because there was a comment you made earlier that was like, maybe this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah, we could call it an observation. I guess I'm trying to be careful to not say outbreak, because that would imply that we're seeing a sudden increase in the number of cases. So I'm being maybe a little technically compulsive in the terminology I choose, but that's the term I've chosen to use. Dr. Parashar, do you have another word you would use?
I think you're absolutely right. And I would say, you know, we have also talked to a lot of the clinicians out there on the front lines who are managing these patients, some who have been in practice for years and years. And many of them do say they are seeing something notable here. So, again, we are not dismissing it. What was unusual about the Alabama cases and some of the recent ones as well was the finding of adenovirus, which we don't know previously is a known cause of hepatitis. And so I think we certainly are looking into this. As I mentioned before, if adenovirus is one of many causes of hepatitis in children, an increase in that per se could be hard to pick up depending on how much of it is related to adenovirus versus other causes.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Amy Cunningham with Science News. Your line is open.
Hi there. Thank you. I was wondering how many of the cases have been tested for adenovirus, what the precise number of positives are, how many of those you've been able to determine are adenovirus 41, and whether you're doing any more liver biopsies, because I know in the initial cases you weren't able to find any evidence of adenovirus in the liver.
Yeah, thanks. So 82% of the 180 have had adenovirus testing on at least one specimen, and a little over half have been positive for adenovirus. Of the number that have had adequate genetic material for typing, we've had 100%, or it's 6 out of 6 have been adenovirus 41.
And are you going to be doing any more liver biopsies to see if you can find evidence of it in the liver?
Yeah, one point of clarification, I mean, we're not recommending routine liver biopsy. That's a clinician's decision to make in the evaluation. But we're certainly asking if there is tissue available from a biopsy, we would like to receive that to be able to do the more specific testing. Of the liver specimens that have been received, either biopsy or explants from the transplanted patients, we have not detected either adenovirus or SARS coronavirus 2 in those liver specimens.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Issam Ahmed with AFP. Your line is open.
Hi. Sorry, you might have gone over this ground already, but just back to your very first point about investigating whether this is a true increase or just a better rate of detection. Doesn't the second hypothesis become less likely given the global picture and what we're seeing in UK, Europe, and other countries? Just wondering about that. And secondly, when was the second death reported, by the way? Thank you.
Was that the second death or the sixth?
The sixth.
Yes, we received news of that yesterday. So that case does not appear in the weekly report that was released on Wednesday. The second hypothesis, which one was that?
The idea that this is just an increased detection, isn't that less likely given that it's not happening just in America? or that we're not just seeing it in America, or is it, or it could it be that multiple countries are just detecting these cases better?
Yes, it is possible that multiple countries are detecting it. Particularly, I mean, it's, when we look at the numbers, you know, the majority are in the UK and the United States, but that's also where we've been looking the hardest. There's probably been the most outreach to clinicians. So it's not an easy answer, an easy question to answer. But I think the global nature doesn't change the nature of the hypotheses.
Right.
And Umesh may want to add to that.
Yeah, and they did a recent report came out where they surveyed 17 European countries on their whether they were seeing an increase in hepatitis cases or not in children. And five of those reported some increase, most notably, as Dr. Butler mentioned, in the UK, where I think they are seeing a significant uptick compared with pre-pandemic trends. But the other 12 did not report any increase. They also surveyed seven non-European countries in the region, and only one of seven reported an increase. So there is country-to-country variability in whether you're seeing an increase compared with baseline trends of hepatitis or not. It could potentially be related to whether there is an increase in adenovirus 41 or not, which also could vary, but those are data still to come to confirm or refute that.
Thank you. Our last question comes from Spencer Kimball with CNBC. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering, is there anything previously in medical or scientific literature that shows an association between adenovirus and hepatitis? My understanding is this can occur with children who are immunocompromised. Correct me if I'm wrong. And if there is previous evidence of an association, how would adenovirus potentially cause hepatitis in children? Thanks.
Yeah, so you're absolutely correct that the medical literature would point to adenovirus 40 and 41 being a cause of hepatitis, primarily in immunocompromised children, and that the difference between those instances and what we're seeing now is that in the immunocompromised children, there's more evidence of direct effects of the adenovirus, in other words, viral inclusions present in the liver, suggesting that the virus is actually attacking the liver. Now, it is possible that that the normal immune system makes that much less likely to be observable, but I think we also are keeping open minds that it may be more going on in terms of how adenovirus is impacting the liver. Based on what we're seeing is we look at more liver specimens and not finding adenovirus, it does raise our suspicions that there's something different going on here.
If I could just have one follow-up, and then, I mean, you all seem confident that vaccination isn't playing a role. Is there anything else you've been able to definitively rule out, you know, the viruses that commonly cause hepatitis, environmental factors?
Yeah, one thing that came up in the last telebriefing in talking with our colleagues in the United Kingdom, they had expressed some concerns that exposure to dogs might play a role, but in talking with them further, they have not seen that hypothesis pan out.
Thank you. Ben, back to you.
Thank you, Amanda, and thank you, Dr. Butler and Dr. Parashar. And thank you all for joining us today. For further questions, please contact the main media line at 404-639-3286, or you can email media@cdc.gov. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.